You are listening to Radio Albion.
Hello, everyone. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, certainly the top name in alternative Russian political and historical analysis. This is the Orthodox Nationalist on Radio Albion. This is coming out at 2 in the morning, Memorial Day weekend, the 24th of May, 2026. I mentioned this on the Pete Kihonis show. On we're doing a line-by-line analysis of Ivan Ilyin there. I got a colonoscopy, and it was the simplest, easiest thing I've ever dealt with. It's like getting a cavity filled. I was out in an hour and a half, and I was back to work in 45 minutes. Apparently, when I was going under, I yelled, "You better not take my organs." I don't remember saying that, but they said I said that. Thank God I was clean. Hasn't exactly been my month. It hasn't been my year for health. So it's the simplest, easiest thing. So there's no reason to put it off. But it hasn't been my year health-wise. The guy that never gets sick, sick all the time. But I think I'm over that. Thank God. Thank God. But it was, I think it was back in February. It was the third time I was in the hospital. And I was under, you know, I was out of it, under the influence of God knows how many drugs. I awoke in the middle of the night. This actually happens from time to time. And something strange occurred to me. And this does occur. And I actually was worried about this for a long time. I don't know if I dreamed about it or what, but I asked myself, was the sinking of the Russian submarine, the Kursk, the reason the West and Russia quickly became enemies? Was that the reason Putin rapidly remade the Russian state and military forces, winning the war in Chechnya? Is that the proximate cause of the mistrust? I mean, obviously, the mistrust goes back centuries. You know, I've been talking about that for ages. But in our day, it occurred to me there, you know, in the middle of the night, that the Kursk sinking had been underestimated. The Kursk, of course, is a humongous submarine, the Russian Navy. I vaguely remember when it happened in 2000, August of 2000. But I paid very little attention to it at the time. I mean, American subs sink and crash all the time. Just in the last 20 years, the USS Hartford, the Tucson, Greenville, the Dolphin, Jacksonville, Connecticut, Oklahoma City, Philadelphia, San Francisco, dozens of others, crashing into anything. So reading about the Kursk disaster, it felt ordinary. But it was not ordinary. Now, was I onto something? Was it just the medication? The more I considered it, the more I realized that I missed a major event, huge in Russia, even today. It didn't make a dent in the U.S. But even the disasters in the American subs that are always going down, that doesn't make much of a dent in the media either. Was it relevant that it took place in the year 2000? It's true, either way. That was Putin's introduction to the life of a Russian president. It turns out the West had every reason to attack the Kursk submarine. And then I fell back asleep and I forgot about it. Until recently. Now, this is the official story. According to NATO, the Russian nuclear submarine, the K-141 Kursk, K means it's nuclear, sank in an accident August 12, 2000, in the Barents Sea. It's between Norway and Russia, technically a part of the Arctic Ocean. The White Sea is a part of the Barents Sea, with the death of all 118 sailors. The submarine, which was of the Project 949A class, that's the famous Oscar II, very large submarines, taking part in the first Russian naval exercises in a long time. Frankly, the Russian Navy was rotting in the 1990s. Sailors hadn't been paid in a very long time. But the Kursk was of Soviet design. These are some of the largest subs in the world. They're comparable to the Ohio class in the U.S. They're still being produced. And the Kursk was an extraordinary vessel. She was over 500 feet long, displacement of 18,000 tons. That's the total weight of the vessel. With a thin beam of 20 feet, the width was 20 feet, making it look like a missile. Only the old Typhoon class was larger in the USSR. Her outer hull was coated with a thin, at 0.33 inches, of nickel-chromium stainless steel. It had tremendous corrosion resistance and a weak magnetic signature. And this is, I know this stuff is pretty much well known. And the point of it was to make it invisible to American magnetic anomaly detectors. It was supposed to be, of course, it's a nuclear submarine. It was designed for missions of a maximum of 120 days. Given where it was berthed, it was meant to crash through the Arctic ice. So it was an icebreaker as well. And it was heavily armed. It was armed with the Granite cruise missiles, 8 torpedo tubes in the bow, 24 and 426 inches. It had a range of roughly 350 miles. And I'm talking about the missiles now. Capable of supersonic flight at altitudes of, 50 miles above. Designed to swarm enemy vessels and intelligently choose individual targets. Her torpedoes were the top of the line. And also, it had the Stallion SSN-16 anti-sub missiles too. But something happened. And you couldn't pay me enough to get down in a submarine. I don't get it. I don't see the attraction. But they're essential to naval exercises, for sure. Nearby ships felt an initial explosion and then a second, much larger explosion. But the Russian Navy, again, this is all the official story, didn't realize that accident had occurred, didn't initiate a search for at least 5 hours. The emergency rescue buoy had been intentionally disabled, or so we're told. It took more than 20 hours to locate the submarine. Now, the Barents Sea is fairly shallow. It was finally found at a depth of 354 feet. Remember what was going on in Russia. This is 2000, essentially the continuation of the 1990s. Again, this is the official version. It failed trying to raise this. It had bad weather for a while. Officials misled and manipulated the public and news media, or actually, I should say, the news media manipulated and misled the officials. President Putin was on vacation. He was in Sochi and said, Norwegians and Russians always got along, especially in that area, accepting their assistance at a certain time. There were no survivors. Now, remember, it shouldn't surprise you that Putin was initially misinformed by the Naval Department as to the severity of the situation. So he didn't go rushing back to Moscow as he should. So it looked, they made him look callous because he was on vacation. Well, these guys were dead in a sub. but they did not tell him how severe it was, so he stayed. So there were people in the Navy clearly who didn't like him. So the official investigation concluded that when the crew loaded a torpedo, a faulty weld leaked peroxide inside the tube, and that created an explosion. The torpedo manufacturer said that didn't happen, but the explosion blew off both the inner and outer tube doors. There was a big fire, destroyed the bulkhead between the first and second compartments, damaged the control room, and destroyed the second compartment, incapacitated or killed the torpedo room and control room crew. Now, 2 minutes later, the rest of the ammunition, 5 to 7 torpedo warheads, exploded. They tore a huge hole in the hull, collapsed the bulkheads, and killed everyone still alive in the forward or the sixth compartment. The nuclear reactors did shut down safely. Now, there were some in the Navy that stated there were about 20 sailors who went as far back as a ninth compartment way back, were able to survive more than 6 hours. Oxygen ran low. But another fire broke out, and it sucked off all the remaining oxygen. These guys couldn't get a break. So that last 23 sailors were killed. Now, generally speaking, that is not what happened. Because a lot of the above is question begging. And while not a big issue in the U.S., it's a huge issue in Russia. The official story, this was the Russian official story, between 2000, 2001, 2002, didn't add up. Questions immediately arose. You know, could a torpedo spontaneously detonate in its tube? No, it's impossible. This is why the manufacturer was so upset by this. All Russian torpedoes, including training ones, have 3 interlocks to prevent the warhead detonator from being triggered inside the submarine. The electrical circuit is interrupted by a limit switch. There's all these redundant safety measures preventing the torpedo from detonating its warhead on the racks or in the tube. And it's actually quite complicated. I should note that the Oscar II class had an emergency escape vessel that could accommodate 110 people, but part of that was destroyed. Either destroyed in the initial detonation, or they simply couldn't get to it. Things happen too quickly. Even more, all torpedoes undergo explosion safety testing under external influences. Shock loads and all this, penetrations of a warhead casing by a high explosive fragment, even by a 12-millimeter machine gun, large caliber machine gun, to make sure they don't go off. It takes a lot for these to go off. It's not like dropping a gun in the movies. Now, what was happening? Again, I didn't pay much attention to this at the time. Most of you probably didn't either. But something was happening. The background here is really where it gets, the case against the U.S. Gets better. For the first time since collapse of the Soviet Union, Russia stood up for itself against NATO and Yugoslavia. The Kursk was the jewel of the Navy. It was the one thing that they can look to with a certain level of pride. As that war was going on, the Kursk was keeping an unnoticed eye on the Sixth Fleet, the American Sixth Fleet's work and its exercises as well as its combat work. Eventually, it received orders to make its presence known, which shocked the Americans. Because that would mean that it was totally unnoticed all the way from the Arctic straight to the Mediterranean, close to where the combat was occurring. Sewed itself, and then disappeared again. Americans were shocked. An entire squadron had previously been unable to detect it near the American fleet. Then that's when NATO called off the bombing raids in Yugoslavia. All resources devoted to searching for the Russian stealth submarine. That submarine had the weaponry to destroy an aircraft carrier group. It was a huge threat to the U.S. The presence of a single Russian submarine, the Kursk, was a powerful argument in the Yugoslavia negotiations. For the first time in a very long time, the Northern Fleet's best, the Kursk, allowed the West to negotiate from allowed Russia to negotiate from a position of strength. Putin was only in office for a few months. He was just getting his feet wet here. This was his welcome to the NFL moment. Now, when the Kursk went down, it wasn't by itself. There were two American submarines close by. The first was the Los Angeles class, the fast attack submarine USS Memphis, trying to keep track of the Kursk, actually for some time. That Los Angeles class eventually succeeded by the Seawolf class. Still, though, half the U.S. Navy is a Los Angeles vintage. SOS signal was heard, but that was created automatically by a special mechanism. So it happened that the Russian search team was the first to reach the source of the distress signal, where the deployed buoy transmitting it was discovered. August 29th, 2020, the New York Times published an article saying, "The American attack submarine USS Memphis of the Los Angeles class was one of two U.S. Navy submarines monitoring the Russian exercises, during which the terrible incident with Kursk occurred." And the implication was that they had something to do with its sinking. I think there's good reason to think that. To this day, the Pentagon will not release details concerning the Memphis and what it was doing there. Even though some of its own crew had already said that it was pursuing the Kursk at the time. By the way, this was the very same submarine, USS Memphis, that had missed the Russian nuclear-powered Kursk in the Mediterranean a year earlier. It was a huge embarrassment. It went through Gibraltar, no problem. This was shocking. So there was almost a personal animus here. So the Pentagon is still hiding something. Now, many theories developed in Russia and abroad. We have to keep in mind what the media was in 2000. It was mostly Jewish-owned. This also was the event that had Putin finally take control over it, and the oligarchs who controlled it. He very wisely kept information from the press because the press wasn't there to tell the truth. They were already making things up. A theory emerged that the American torpedo, had hit the Russian nuclear-powered submarine. And it persisted for a very long time. And when it was raised, the particular damage seemed to suggest that. But there were many, you know, if you look at how various torpedoes create their damage, it's all over the place. It's not often just a smooth hole, but sometimes it's, you know, far worse than that. But over the course of a year, you had painstaking work by numerous specialists and investigators. You had 15 theories that were explored and, for better or for worse, discarded. It was very difficult to raise something like this from the ocean floor, but, you know, 150 yards. But the Russians did it, and actually it was the very first time that was done with something this large. The Kirillov Research Institute and the Russian Naval Institute. This was the first time this happened, to recover a sunken submarine more or less intact. And the first underwater operation of such a scale that was ever done was in 2000. There were some Dutch specialists there too, but it was mostly a Russian operation. But it was a huge operation. A popular theory fairly early on was that the Kursk collided with the American submarine Memphis. The Memphis was clearly damaged. The Kursk, when it was raised, was brought to the Rostokovsky, 82nd Naval Ship Repair Yard in Murmansk, drained of all water, and there was a 46-member team that went to work. It seemed that they were told by various forces, I'm not even saying the state, that it was simply an accident, the explosion of propellant components in a training torpedo. You know, 1,000 gallons of hydrogen peroxide, 300 gallons of kerosene, something like that. And no one was satisfied. Again, the official story, the first explosion occurred in the fourth torpedo tube that resulted in the torpedo tube cover being driven into the fourth compartment, then a fire, then a second explosion. The second explosion detonated all the ammunition in the torpedo compartment, destroying the main command post where the ship's commander was located. And that was a huge explosion. There was no way to recover from this. No one was ever taken to task for this. There were some criminal charges brought, but these were dismissed in August of 2002. Again, no one was satisfied. It was strange, though. As soon as the Kursk was docked, it was very clear that there was a almost perfectly round hole near the edge of the hull rupture. And the diameter is exactly what the American Heavy Mark 48 torpedo would do. And it just so happens that the Mark 48 torpedo is in the news because it sank the Iranian frigate for no clear reason near Sri Lanka. It wasn't involved in combat operations. This reminds me of the Argentinian battleship General Belgrano, which had no reason to be sunk. This, too, was not even armed for combat whatsoever. Now, the head ship of the Northern Fleet was Peter Veliki, or Peter the Great. It's very difficult to tell, and the information from their main ship, the Kursk wasn't the only one hit that day. It also launched an attack, or more or less a counterattack. The Russian ships received distress signals from the foreign submarine, or the American submarine, on the 13th and the 14th of August. Strangely, a few days later, Putin gets a call from Bill Clinton. The Americans abandoned the deployment of a missile defense system, or so we're told, and allegedly forgave Russia a large debt, even granted a $10 billion loan, or so we're told. There may be some truth to that, but only some. We'll get into that in a little bit more, but there is no loan record there. And in terms of debt forgiveness, that wouldn't come from the Treasury anyway. That would have to go through the House, and there is no record of that. There's some restructuring that came through in 2001. Well, we'll get to that in a little while, but that theory that the Americans kind of tried to make it up to the Russians by these financial things is a theory that a lot of people have put forward. But I can't find a whole lot of evidence for all this massive debt forgiveness. However, I do have to, as an aside, see the weakness of Russia at the time where it couldn't pay its debts in 1997, just a few years earlier. It went into default. Within 4 or 5 years, under Vladimir Putin, the nationalist system, Russia was debt-free. It had paid its debt early. I was writing about it at the time. Not only that, it became a creditor nation. Now, it's very possible that the missile defense system, we all know the efficacy of missile defense systems today, but we didn't know it at the time. So that there was any connection between that and the Kursk is another matter. But I personally believe, and again, I always have an open mind about this stuff. It's not etched in stone, but the Americans sank the Russian submarine. At the time, it was unanimously rejected, even though you had some naval officers saying that's what happened. It is now dominant. It's now the dominant theory throughout Russia, not just among officers. Journalists were posing as family members in front of cameras, trying to make it look like they were blaming Putin. But they did not. Again, the media Jewish-owned at the time, and quite frankly, only state media could be trusted at the time. The Jewish-owned media could never be. Now, it wasn't Russian naval officers that developed the theory that the Kursk was torpedoed by American submarines. It was a Canadian team from the History Channel. In 2005, in the film Kursk, A Submarine in Troubled Waters, which I've seen, the authors describe the exercises in the North Sea, in the Barents Sea, differently, and the roles of the American ships. But they all agreed on one thing. Russians had known from the very beginning about the U.S. Navy warships observing their exercises. And immediately after the event, they scrambled 2 squadrons of aircraft to destroy these submarines. The bombing of the fleeing Americans was stopped by a personal order from Vladimir Putin. But the Canadians and the French, they lacked confirmation on this. It was true early on, but as far as the press was concerned, if you blame the Americans for the destruction of the Kursk, you did not have a voice. Low circulation, you know, tabloids, Versi, you know, things like that, that was about it. And even there, those newspapers were shut down, which in general terms is all right, but they actually were correct for once. You had secret photographs taken by the Canadians of the starboard side, which was rarely photographed, showing the entry wound from the American MK-48. 700-pound warhead, $6 million apiece. That was classified in Russia. Those who adhere to the American version of the Kursk torpedoing agree on one thing. The world miraculously avoided a much larger conflict. Now, I know authors get very, they get very excitable and talk about World War III and everything else. Russia was in no position to fight anybody at the time. Now, there's a few sources within the Russian state and the Russian Navy. Several of them don't want to be identified. Of course, this is now a long time ago. The first is Lieutenant Colonel Andre, and he has no other identification than that. He was an assistant to Valentin Korobelnikov, who was head of the GRU, head of the main intelligence directorate of the general staff. And here's what he said. It was Saturday evening. The atmosphere at headquarters was tense, to put it mildly. We knew the Kursk had sunk, but back then, it was classified information. We didn't know any details. Admiral Popov, of the cruiser Peter the Great, who made the first report, mentioned something about a collision with a foreign submarine. We knew that the exercises in the Barents Sea were being closely monitored by foreign intelligence agencies, including the Americans, but we lacked concrete information. So, at the time, he said a lot of nothing. Now, according to Andre, The AS-15 midget submarine quickly located the Kursk after the disaster, but no decision was made to launch a rescue operation. But there were divers on board that could operate depths up to 200 meters. Again, this is a fairly shallow area. It's not like the Titanic. Andre continues. We thought the crew was dead. There was no contact with them. I was making coffee for Kalibelnikov. The phone rang. The commander turned pale. He listened. He muttered. He said, I'll be there immediately. He leaned on the table. He blurted out, those American assholes sank our ship. You understand? There's going to be war, damn it. There's going to be war. Putin arrived from Sochi, and the CIA director, Tenet, is here. If anyone finds out about this, I'll shoot them myself. George Tenet of the CIA was there? Well, yes, he was. The corridor of the general staff was electrified. The unexpected visit of George Tenet, the director of the CIA at the time. Only a few people knew that Putin had come back from his vacation, which he had just begun. Andre was still afraid. He still, you know, I don't know if he's around or not, but he wouldn't let his name be published. He said, you've read Suvorov, haven't you? He talking about Viktor Suvorov. You know what the GRU does with traitors. But this wasn't a well-known fact, but George Tenet of the CIA arrived in Moscow with a message from Clinton and on a peacekeeping mission. He knew that the American subs had something to do with the destruction of the Kursk. Whether accidentally or on purpose is irrelevant. His task was to prevent escalation of the conflict. Again, Russia was in no position to fight the U.S. at the time. It shows you how radically things have changed in you know, just a few years, just a generation. Andre learned everything after the meeting. The meeting was between, Putin, Tenet, and Korobelnikov. It included the head of the Federal Security Service, Nikolai Petrushev, and the defense minister of the day, Igor Sergeyev. No information to the press, which was a very wise thing. The first reports of the ship's sinking were published in TASS only on that Monday. But when Tenet returned to Moscow, it was no secret the second time. There's a Captain Vitaly Dutsenko. He left the service after the Kursk disaster, not because of it, but immediately, just after it. He teaches at the General Staff Academy. He said, it was totally unprecedented. The head of the CIA has never officially visited Russia. Moreover, I'm inclined to believe that he was here more than once. The idea of his sudden visit on that Saturday is quite unexpected. But it was hard to, you know, given the nature of the media, both Russian and foreign, only a real seasoned scholar was able to peel the layers of truth and falsehood apart from each other. Now, Deputy Prime Minister Ilya Klebanov hated the idea. Says he was torpedoed by Deputy Prime Minister, which is very in bad taste. And he headed yet another government commission investigating the causes of the disaster. So Andre says further, you can blame the Russian authorities for many things when you think about those days. Filled with hope for the rescue of those 23 sailors in the 9th compartment of the Kursk. The sailors who survived the second explosion in the torpedo compartment gave their lives in exchange for peace and good relations between Russia and the U.S. But in reality, the authorities sacrificed them. For a while, Putin had been misled as to all of this stuff. This certainly was the case with Yeltsin. They didn't tell him anything. And that was bleeding over. And I think these men in the Naval Department were removed once it became known that they were lying to him. And he looked like a callous jerk, as I said before. Some of the notes written on the sub were recovered. Some of them. Many of them were kept in the GRU archives. Some of them have been released, only some of them have been released to the public. So using them, satellite imagery, a bunch of other things, we can piece together some conception of what happened. 8:51 a.m. that day in August, the Kursk captain, Gennady Lyachin, reported to the General Popov on the Peter the Great that, as a part of the exercise, he was ready to launch a new type of Sikhval torpedo. Very powerful weapon. The Kursk then was at periscope depth, maybe 18 yards. Lyachin orders radio silence. He knows that there are two American submarines, the Memphis and the Toledo, which up until this point hadn't been mentioned, were tracking him. Also, of course, he knew that NATO satellites were tracking him. And there was a Norwegian reconnaissance ship, Marjata, and a British cruiser. So Russian ships that were participating there in the exercises gathered around the Kursk area where the Kursk was operating to ensure the crew's safety. This was a momentous occasion. What made it more interesting, that the Sikhval torpedoes, these were the first carrier killer torpedoes. They were slated for sale to China. And so you had a group of naval officers and politicians from the PRC aboard the Peter the Great. So for the Americans, he says, selling these torpedoes to China would be a huge blow. It would undermine the balance of power in the Asian region. These are two-ton missiles, 500 miles an hour underwater, while traditional torpedoes don't exceed 60. That might be a little bit optimistic, but they were fast. This is all thanks to the design that allows the torpedo to be surrounded by an air bubble. The Americans tried to steal the secrets of the Sikhval for a long time, but the Russian intelligence thwarted them. This refers to the arrest of an American agent, businessman Edmund Pope, just a month before the Kursk was sinking. He wanted to buy the plan for the Sikhval from the designer directly, but that was interrupted. So, in the Barents Sea, the Americans had no other option. They started taking risks. They were attempting to disrupt the torpedo launch in front of the Chinese officers. The Toledo, very small compared to the Kursk, maneuvers around the Russian ship, obscuring visibility. And the Memphis, more in the distance, monitors everything on its radar system. 11:28 a.m., the Kursk was ready to launch the missile, or the torpedo, the Sikhval. Then the Toledo approached dangerously close, and a collision occurred. The nerves of the Russians and Americans were no longer strong. The Memphis sonar registers the sound of the Kursk torpedo hatch opening. In other words, they're going to fire to prevent the Toledo from being sunk by a Sikhval torpedo. The Memphis captain fires the MK-48. And, of course, the Kursk's fate was sealed. The American torpedo penetrated the ship's hull, the aft torpedo compartment, very close to the bridge. Massive explosion, and ignites the uranium, starting a huge fire. The fire spreads to the other 24 torpedoes. 2 minutes and 15 seconds later, the impact causes a massive explosion in the torpedo compartment, and the sub sinks. The force of the explosion was so great that even had seismic stations in Norway recording it. It just so happens that the shockwave also damaged the Memphis. So the Russians were absolutely certain, as were the Chinese who were there at the time, that the Kursk was sunk by the Americans. Their sub had fled towards Norway. It was later located by satellites in a repair dock. But the Memphis escape was a maneuver to divert attention from the Toledo. Damage after its collision with the Kursk was fleeing towards the U.S. Russians being generally unaware of this, Admiral Popov of the Peter the Great gave the order to abandon the wreck site along with Chinese officers, return to shore near Murmansk, and from there he reported to the general staff. Yes, so far, lots of unanswered questions. General Korobelnikov, GRU ordered a search operation to the captain of the AS-15 submarine. They found it, but everyone's convinced that the crew had not survived. On board, however, were 23 P-700 Granit nuclear missiles. So, to prevent the ship and its missiles from being captured by foreign combat units, Popov ordered the submarine to be systematically bombarded with deep-sea mines. That's what the French and Canadians didn't know at the time. And I mentioned earlier. Again, Andre says the following. We were convinced that there had been a collision with a foreign vessel, that the explosion in the torpedo compartment had been caused by a collision with the seabed. The Americans, however, immediately admitted what had actually happened, sending George Tenet of the CIA to us on a secret mission. It was a shock. Only thanks to Putin was there no counterattack. Although many admirals sternly reproached him for bargaining with the West rather than hitting them with even nuclear weapons at the time. That was absolutely absurd, of course. Now, CIA Director Tenet admits that the Memphis, in a panic, fired first. Now, Putin is aware that at the time, Russia is in no position to fight the U.S., and certainly not on water. Still, they're not willing to risk it. Russia still has a huge submarine force. The Russian population is up in arms, and Putin only very briefly had a slight dip in popularity, but that changed once it became clear what really happened. Putin had been president for about 5 months at this time. He's struggling to respond. The authorities insisted that the Kursk sank on Sunday, not Saturday, and no one survived the explosion and fire. And there was no nuclear weapons on board. No mention of foreign ships in the Barents Sea, or of 23 sailors trapped in the ninth compartment. You had a few admirals who attempted to present a different version of events from the official one. Some of them were reprimanded. The official version, however, still said that the Kursk suffered a fuel leak from a training torpedo. Yes, I know. Every time I mention the official version, it's a different thing. That's no surprise. But no matter what the official version was, from whether it be from Moscow or from the American Navy, it satisfied absolutely nobody. Admiral Valery Ryazantsev, who edited the government commission investigating the causes of the disaster, yet again another name, maintains that the training torpedoes were poorly used and poorly maintained. He said, well, they were laying quietly in storage before the exercise. Really nothing bad happened to them. But going into combat readiness required the crew to properly prepare and secure the torpedoes, which never happened. The crew made a mistake that cost the lives of 118 sailors. As I mentioned before, the manufacturer of this was up in arms too, because they could have been in the dock over this. They never were, because they were correct. That theory says that the training torpedoes, were not equipped with compressed air valves, and that the first torpedo crew failed to close the ventilation hatches leading to the second torpedo compartment, rendering it vulnerable. So when the torpedo exploded in the first compartment, the shockwave penetrated through the valves into the adjacent compartment. The Kursk, with its first compartment flooded and the second seriously damaged, hit the bottom at speeds of maybe 3 knots, angle of 42 degrees. And that, hitting the bottom, resulted in the torpedo tubes 1, 3, 5, and 6, then the detonation of the torpedoes contained within. That's what Ryazantsev's report states. And so many naval experts were up in arms over this, that this simply can't happen. That's not how torpedoes work. But this was filed away. And the Navy command explained that the use of older torpedoes or in a state-of-the-art submarine was dictated by economic considerations, and that certainly is true. It's shocking what Putin did in just a few years. You think of what the Russian military was in the first Chechnya war. And then when Putin takes over, rebuilds the state and destroys the Chechen resistance, foreigners. And in 4 years, 5 years, creates a first rank power again. I know of only two people who have done that in history. If there's others, let me know. Hitler and General Park in South Korea. We know the condition of Russia in the year 2000. It had nothing. It had no money. Now, so much was classified. One of the reasons all this is very confusing, and it should be confusing to you, because so much was classified for so long, and the media, both American and Russian, were simply making things up. You know, this is what Johnson's Law states. Access to the records of the Kursk efforts raising was also restricted. Now, on the right side, the starboard side, there's a distinct long dent. That's the impact of the MK-48, not the round hole. The submarine was photographed only once from this side, only once. So the remains of all 118 crew members were recovered. The Kursk was very quickly dismantled. Only the bridge was spared. That became part of the monument to the fallen sailors put up not that long ago. The American connection was removed from any consideration in Russia. Not necessarily because they didn't believe it, but because they knew they were in no position to fight the U.S. But also, Clinton was worried too. Maybe the U.S. isn't in a position. This is not a country they want to go to war against. Again, there's this theory that after Tenet visits Russia again, this is not a secret visit, this is a public visit, the U.S. canceled Russia's debt and granted Moscow a long-term loan of $10 billion. Again, I'll get to that in a little bit. I don't think that's true, but the Kursk case was officially closed. Any attempt to get any comment from the press service or the Navy or the military intelligence got nothing from this point onward. Now, I mentioned their voyage in the Mediterranean. Here's the reason, a long-term reason the U.S. wanted this thing destroyed. I didn't know anything about this when it first occurred. It's a logbook that's been classified for 38 years. I'm sorry, what am I saying here? 23 years. I don't know where 38 years come from. For 3 months, the Kursk was tasked with tracking potential enemy carrier strike groups. That's what the Kursk was for. It was also designed to remain undetected. The Russian crew in this Mediterranean voyage demonstrated the tremendous ability to overcome anti-submarine barriers and reach Western Europe. See, in the 1950s, the Navy deployed the SOSUS systems, detecting the noise of submarine propellers. Previously, a submarine could navigate the Strait of Gibraltar, maybe hiding behind a civilian vessel. That was an old Soviet idea. But once that system was installed, even that wouldn't work. But the Kursk, under Captain Lyachin, they crossed the barrier. That was at the height, again, of the Yugoslav crisis. As the U.S. thinks that it's now creating this end-of-history unilateral world, the Kursk gave a wake-up call. Once the Kursk came through and was following American ships straight out into the Eastern Mediterranean, you had Navy officials being fired. In fact, the commander of the USS Memphis, that very same sub, was punished, if not removed, for failing to locate the Kursk in the Mediterranean. The Americans ended up spending $20 million at the time searching for the Russian submarine, which doesn't seem like much. But that's just in deployment costs. The next time they would see each other, the Memphis and the Kursk, would be on August 12th, 2000. And the Russians, after a very long period of time, had combat exercises on the Barents Sea. That's a tough place to operate, as you may imagine. Although it's shallow, it's extremely cold. And you never know, you know, it's not the North Atlantic, but it would remind you of the North Atlantic. Anything could happen. And again, the demonstration of this Schickfeld torpedo, which is supposed to be able to sink, it's a proximity torpedo, sink aircraft carriers. This was of great interest to the U.S. And it was the U.S. that called it aircraft carrier killer, not the Russians. The very fact that there was a Chinese delegation there frightened the hell out of the U.S. and the U.S. Navy. That wasn't talked about at the time. The U.S. was doing everything it could to steal the design of the Schickfeld torpedo. However, it seemed the very existence of this one submarine, there were a few others in that class, of course, dealt a blow to at least the perception of U.S. naval superiority. So the whole thing comes down to the American desire to disrupt the Kursk's tests in front of a Chinese audience. Now, Memphis had been assigned to the Barents Sea for quite a while, really with the mission of trying to gather information about the weaponry on the Kursk. Later on, the Toledo was involved in surveillance. That was, because it was smaller, meant to approach Kursk at close range. It was just a matter of time here. The Toledo is following the Kursk. The Memphis decides to protect the submarine's escape route to avoid a collision with the Russians, but that didn't happen. In order to keep the weapon from being fired and impressing the Chinese who were on board the Peter the Great, Toledo maneuvers around the Russian ship, trying to obscure its visibility. The other submarine hit the Kursk. Once it was hit, the Kursk loaded up its torpedoes for combat. The Memphis knew that if they got off one of the Schickfeld torpedoes, they'd be no survivors. Their nerves had been completely frayed because of the Mediterranean deal and how much trouble they got into over the Kursk. They hated it, and they wanted it gone. But before the Kursk can get the torpedo off, they launch the MK or the Mark 48 torpedo directly into the Kursk torpedo compartment. And as I said, it threw the Memphis back with a shockwave. The Kursk did not recover. Now, yes, it's true there were a handful that were able to survive for a short time. This is no way to die. I can't even conceive of it because it would be, I think, completely black. The 23 men behind the reactor compartment, they probably were deaf, stunned, and crippled. And they weren't able to get to the emergency escape. You know, the emergency escape pod only works if you can get to it. Now, even the Memphis was on the seabed near the Kursk because they were badly damaged. Not as extensively, but they were badly damaged. It's reported that 10 American sailors were killed on the Memphis. But you know how the Americans are with casualties. They'll never admit it. So the Memphis crew immediately deployed the light green emergency buoy over the sunken submarine. But the Russian submarines only use the red and white. So when the cruiser, Peter the Great, discovered the sunken submarine, its acoustic technicians detected underwater sound communications. Some was transmitting signals from 2:22 a.m. to 11 o'clock a.m. over the course of almost a day. But they came to the conclusion that this was just a matter of, this was an automated system. So the American submarine reached the Norwegian base of Bergen. They could only go about 5 knots. They were limping back there. The pictures of that are from Russian satellites. So clearly the Americans were a part of this. They couldn't get any farther than Norway. They couldn't have lasted any longer. There's no question they sustained casualties, and they were there for 8 days. and they were at the closed dock after Southampton. The Americans refused to allow NATO allies, even the British, to inspect the damaged submarine's hull. That's a shocking admission by itself. They certainly had something to hide. There are a few pictures, satellite images from the Memphis at the Norwegian dock, which shows extensive damage. But still, this is Russia in the 1990s. Even though, you know, it's 2000, it's still the 1990s. This scandal that developed was not beneficial at all to the Russian government. Believe it or not, the U.S. was one of the big creditors Russia was in debt to, which is, I can't even consider that today, but it was the case back then. Bill Clinton at least had the wherewithal to understand maybe we're underestimating. This is the American disease, always underestimating their opponent. The Kursk became a sacrifice for world peace, so to speak, the dawn of the 21st century. There was a temptation to avenge the loss of the Kursk, but what could have happened would have been very severe, very possibly. Captain Lyachin was posthumously awarded the title of the Hero of Russia. These logbooks, as I said, had been classified for some time. Only very recently did even pieces of them come out of hiding, come out of their classified status. Even the Mediterranean issue, the logbooks are barely extant. See, back in 1882, the Order of the Department of the Navy of the U.S., a new unit was formed, the Intelligence Department and the Bureau of Navigation, which later became Office of Naval Intelligence. And it was exposed. It was exposed twice. Edmund Pope, as I mentioned before, and its connection with the Kursk disaster later. There was another ship. It was an American anti-submarine reconnaissance ship, the USNS Loyal, in the area, always accompanied by a few subs, anti-submarine destroyers of enemy submarines. So using helicopters and satellite-based detection systems, the Loyal effectively guides its anti-submarine fighter submarines to their targets. This is how the Memphis eventually got to the Kursk. Let me read a piece of one of the declassified documents. While performing combat missions in the Mediterranean, the nuclear-powered missile submarine Kursk operated in conditions of overwhelming superiority of the potential enemy's anti-submarine forces. It carried out the mission of monitoring enemy carrier strike groups. It tracked them and conducted an on-the-spot search for foreign submarines while maintaining stealth and combat stability. Following its combat service, 72 crew members were nominated for government awards. Captain Lyachin was nominated for the award Hero of Russia. I don't remember reading about this at the time. I may have missed it, but when the Kursk went through undetected, the Strait of Gibraltar, just by itself, not hiding or anything else behind a civilian ship or anything, undetected, that was a victory in the naval world that could outclass any combat victory. It's so narrow. What are the chances of slipping through undetected? And guess who's blamed? Not just the Navy in general, but the Memphis. It was an extraordinary thing. The Americans spent like $10.5 million just in fuel in, you know, was it 1998, whatever that was, searching for the submarine. It was humiliating. And everyone, all the navies of the other nations of the world were watching. Certainly, one submarine was no match for the Kursk. Unless, of course, it fires, unexpectedly. The truth is that given the weaponry of the Kursk, it could have destroyed the Sixth Fleet. As a Project 949 submarine, the Granite-class missiles, capable of penetrating any naval air defense system, torpedoed with nuclear warheads, possibly. Now, when it arrived in the Mediterranean, U.S. and NATO aircraft carrier groups were in the process of rotating. One was leaving for its base in Norfolk, the other had just arrived. The task, then, was to detect and track both the first group and the second, which they did quite successfully. They even carried out 5 simulated missile launches. The truth is that the aircraft carriers from which Serbia was being bombed at the time could have very easily been sunk. I want to quote from Captain Vitaly Lulin, former commander of a nuclear submarine. It was revenge. The Memphis commander had been repeatedly slapped in the face by Liachin. In the Mediterranean, the American had been repeatedly flogged for failing to notice a Russian submarine. Let me remind you, at the end of 1999, the height of the Yugoslav crisis, the Kursk had been seriously frayed NATO's nerves by unexpectedly showing up in the Mediterranean. The experienced, feisty commander had worn himself out tracking it, and then fate brought him and Liachin together again. To hush up the scandal, on August 17th, 5 days after the disaster, CIA Director George Tenet arrived incognito in Moscow on a private jet. In other words, it was not an official visit. This has only fairly recently come out. Now, back to the disaster itself. It's true that the Memphis was on a mission to destroy the Kursk. The only thing that Memphis cared about, or at least, their orders were, to better investigate the ballistic missile launch, miscalculating its course and distance. And then there was definitely a head-on collision. Now, somehow, the Toledo got it into their brains that upon this occurring, they got into their minds that the Russians had somehow attacked the Memphis. And that's where the torpedo came from, not the Memphis. It came from the Toledo. They launched a torpedo against the Kursk. So they already struck the weakened section of the junction of the second and third compartments that I mentioned already. The documentary film shows this at great length. They have a computer-generated version of what happened. Oil slicks in the water in the direction of the enemy submarine could be found. Some newspapers said it was a British submarine, so for some reason that the Toledo was a British submarine, why the British would name their ships after Toledo doesn't make any sense, but they thought that. Things happened very, very quickly. But after this happened, Sergeyev, who was the defense minister at the time, scrambled 2 anti-submarine squadrons. They immediately reported to Putin on vacation, and then the Americans contacted him. Well, his vacation was ruined. But Putin recalled the planes. There was going to be a war. It's very possible that they regretted not sinking the aircraft carriers that were bombing Serbia. I never knew that was even a possibility at the time. Putin stayed calm because escalating tensions in the condition Russia was in would be awful for Russia. And I think he was right to do so. Still, the CIA director was back and forth to Moscow, very worried about all of this. That wouldn't have mattered if this was simply an accident, something wrong with the torpedo system in the Kursk itself. No one was allowed near the submarine afterwards. I think the Danes were let in a little bit later. They couldn't approach the bow, though. They're the ones who found the post-mortem notes written by the sailors before they died. They confirmed that no one had survived. As it turns out, Russian divers were ordered to remove all traces, the pieces of the Memphis, from the seabed near the Kursk. The Russian newspapers that published satellite images of the suspicious foreign submarine that was undergoing repairs in Norway, they were shut down. Yes, it was the Memphis, absolutely. They tried to deny it, but it wasn't true. It took 7 days to reach Norway. You know, I barely made it. The Toledo, very worried, was zigzagging, took the unconventional route to the U.S. Those who wanted war, Putin dismissed them, and with good reason. If it had occurred today, it would be a very different story. Once this documentary, as I mentioned, was shown, with all this new information, the BBC editor Nick Fraser said that this was a pack of lies. He refused to air the documentary. That had a record audience of more than 4 million when it screened on French TV. Now, there was another documentary that I did not see from the BBC called What Sank the Kursk? And that just repeated the official version. The sinking was caused just by some malfunction in the torpedoes on the Kursk itself. It took a long time for the facts to come out. U.S. military source in the documentary declares that the hull to be the trademark evidence of an American MK-48 torpedo, which is made to melt cleanly through steel sheets due to a mechanism at the tip of its that combusts copper. The attack happened while two U.S. submarines, Toledo and Memphis, were shadowing the Kursk in a military exercise, as I've already mentioned. Whether or not there was a debate whether or not it was a collision or a torpedo hit, we know today that it was both. But it was done quite deliberately. Not necessarily the collision, but their behavior was so reckless that it was very clear they weren't going to let the Kursk out of there. Yes, there was a cover-up by both Clinton and Vladimir Putin. Now, again, let me say something about that. This is very common in Russia to say that a huge portion of Russian debt was canceled and a loan was given and everything else. I can't find a lot of evidence for that. I've seen a Bloomberg article in October of 2000 that some restructuring was permitted in 1996. There was no loan. It was a $10 billion loan from the IMF. That wasn't from the U.S. Treasury. In 2021, many years later, the London Club of Commercial Creditors wrote off some debt. I'm sorry, 2001, not 2021. I apologize. In 2001, the London Club did write off some debt, but not the U.S. In fact, the only government that was pushing for that was the Germans, Gerhard Schroeder at the time. He was the one who was pushing for it. But even if it were true, it would have nothing to do with the Kursk. Russia simply couldn't repay its debts at the time. So something like that would have occurred anyway. So while I believe the Americans, and I think it's beyond dispute, the Americans sank the Kursk, we can't use that as evidence. I think I've made my point here. And of course, it's in the memory of the Orthodox sailors who were killed here, largely because of a psychological motive. The humiliation of the U.S. Navy, again, not known at the time, that this massive Russian sub that had the weaponry to destroy the entire Sixth Fleet got through the most sophisticated sub-detection systems just a year earlier, before the disaster, and that it was all blamed on the Memphis. When they came together again in 2000, there was no chance the Memphis is going to leave the Kursk alone. the Kursk was the envy of the submarine world. That entire class. Regardless, I reject the debt write-off thing. I think that's very naive. I don't think that happened. However, I think now it's beyond debate that the American Navy sunk the Russian submarine Kursk in August of 2000, and it was only Vladimir Putin's diplomacy that kept this from exploding, literally, into a greater war, a war that Russia at the time could not win. Not to mention any debt write-off, if it was from the Treasury, would come through Congress. That debate would last for hours. So that's simply not true, although it's very common in Russia to believe that. Nevertheless, that's what happened. It was just more, and this wasn't even, we can't even talk about an empire. The empire wasn't declined at the time. But the Kursk coming into the Mediterranean, that may have been possibly one of the very first signs militarily that the U.S. isn't what they thought they were. It was such a humiliation that no one really knew about at the time that the Memphis vowed revenge, and that was the end of it. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.